Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present and those emerging.
Laura's been missing for 13 and a half years. Laura was witty and creative and we had so much fun together. We were very, very close. There's a place in my head and in my heart all the time for Laura. She's always present in my mind. Laura, I miss you dearly and hope to hear from you soon. Your kids are doing so well and you'd be really proud of them.
The last day I saw my sister Elaine, I remember I was 12 years old. We stayed up really late in our bedroom, sitting on the floor. We were drawing, and the next day she was gone. My dad passed away last year. The one thing we wanted was Dad to find out, you know, what had happened before he passed away, but it didn't happen, which, yeah, it's not easy. I miss that we didn't get the opportunity to see how Elaine grow old with us, have children.
Susie went missing in February 1987. Susie was my only girl. I had three boys. I get butterflies in my tummy even now when I think of the first time I held her in my arms because I so badly wanted a girl. The worst part is not knowing. If someone dies, you've got a finality because they're buried and you have a funeral. But with this, there's no answer, so you're just left in limbo.
The thing I miss most about Nathan is not having my son in my world. I would love to have seen him grow into manhood and achieve his destiny, whatever that might have been. I love you, Nathan. And I'm longing for you to come home. I care about you, son. You matter to me and I miss you.
Those are some of the stories being highlighted this year by the National Missing Persons Coordination Centre. There are over 2,000 long-term missing persons in Australia, and this campaign seeks to remind us they aren't just missing, but they are missed. Last week I released a book called CSI Told You Lies, which is about the very real experts who work at the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine. One of the many things they do there, alongside the autopsies and crime scene investigations, is that they work with the National Missing Persons Coordination Centre. Why? Because there are, at any given time, around 500 sets of unidentified human remains stored in mortuaries around Australia. 500 people who've died in Australia without identification, who no one seems to be looking for. It's shocking, but it's also possibly due, at least to some degree, to a very fixable administrative issue. Big changes were made last year and we need to get the word out, so we'll talk to one of those very real live forensic specialists soon. But first, I thought we should remember what it's really all about. There's a phrase that's been adopted by those in this terrible club to describe the feeling they've lived with every moment since someone they love disappeared. The phrase is ambiguous loss. It's definitely a loss, but they don't know if they've been left, in which case it's hurtful, so they could allow themselves some anger, but also some hope that they'll be reunited. On the other hand, though, they don't know if there's foul play involved, if they've been robbed of someone, if they've been victimised, if there's someone walking around free who they should be chasing down. These are just two of what must be endless options when your loss is ambiguous and you've got all those sleepless nights to ponder. I first spoke to Dylan Redman in February of 2016 for another podcast. His big brother Owen Redman had been missing for 15 years at that time. Dylan is definitely the family member most dedicated to keeping the search for Owen active. He created a Facebook page, Help Find Owen, which he updates religiously, and he regularly participates in missing persons events on Owen's behalf. Here's a bit of our chat from 2016.
2005 was probably the major one, which was the Missing Persons Week launch, and I had no idea what I was walking into. You know, cameras everywhere. Then they started asking me questions, and I'm like, oh, this is all right, I can answer some questions. And they put me on camera, and I was like, oh, crumbs, you know. And they asked me things like, you know, tell us a bit about your brother, and I'm like, that was good. And then they said, how do you feel about it? And then I just lost it. Mm-hmm. I've never cried like that in my life. Like, and then I was a teacher, you know, like I'm taking a break at the moment, but I was a teacher, and the next day I went to school. And all my kids at school had seen it. And they're just like, you could see they were like, oh, what are we saying? Oh, I'd never, you know, like I'd never really cried since I was a little kid like that. And I just completely lost it. But then, you know, a lot of good came out of it. A lot of people have talked to me about it. And a lot of people have talked to me about their own situations where they've lost people or, you know, and it's just like something really good can come out of this. Even though maybe for me, I feel like maybe I'm not going to have the happy ending necessarily and find my brother. But I know through this I can help other people and encourage other people and raise awareness of the issue. So, yeah.
Was there a moment or a time when you thought, I have to prepare myself that this is not a happy ending?
There have been a few moments like that. I'm not really a big psychic kind of person, but about four or five people have been to psychics and said, oh, hey, I went to a psychic and they told me about your brother. And I'm like, oh, no, here we go. And I know it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
I've had ones sort of say things like, oh, your brother was in Carnarvon in Western Australia, and he's been on drugs and he's passed away from an overdose. And sometimes I drive tour buses on the Great Ocean Road, and one particular summer I was just really working really hard and driving nearly every day out there. And a friend of mine's like, oh, I went to a psychic. And before I could stop him, he's like, oh, and they said he's thrown himself off the cliffs of the Great Ocean Run. I'm like, oh, man. So every day I drive out there, I'm like tearing up because I'm thinking, man, you know. But then I'm like, no, this is not legitimate. It's not for real. I guess people don't think. I mean, it's like when someone passes away, you know, there's that common line of, oh, you know, sorry for your loss. But you can't say that when someone's missing. So then they're kind of like, well, yeah, so and sometimes you just get to the point, look, you know what, I don't really want to talk about this right now. It's hard. I mean, like I said, I don't expect at this point now, I don't expect that there's going to be a good ending to all of this in the sense that one day Owen's going to ring up and say, hey, man, you know, I'm all right. It's all good. Maybe to some limited degree, I think maybe he might ring up one day or send an email or write a letter and say, hey, you know, I'm okay, but too much water under the bridge. You know, it's been too long. And I mean, there's two scenarios, I suppose, in this, that he's dead, which is not the good scenario. You know, he might have committed suicide or maybe he's just passed away through natural causes or an accident or something. And the other option is that he's somewhere and he just doesn't want to be part of my family. And he probably just feels like, okay, I've started again. I don't want to go back.
What were his relationships like with you guys, with his family? Did it fit in a way? Was he distant? Could you believe a year later that he hadn't contacted you and your mum?
I could kind of believe that.
Yeah, okay.
He wasn't close to my father. They were probably too much like each other, both intellectuals, both very strong points of view. My mum was the same. She was very dogmatic, very strong in what she believed, and they didn't get along. When my parents divorced when I was about 12, I think that was when our family was sort of shattered and they went in different directions. And I think that's when he was kind of like close to 18. He went off to uni. So I guess we got along really well. We'd go out and see bands, just kind of hang out. And it was really good. We really reconnected probably about a year before he left. Because when I was a kid, I was probably one of those annoying little brothers that, you know, that you always want to beat up.
Yep.
And I remember getting caught in some pretty good, not beatings because he wasn't really violent, but, you know, like headlocks and, crow pecks and stuff like that. You know, he'd get his knuckles and he'd whack him in the head. You know, like, I probably deserved it too.
Yep.
But I remember a moment we were walking down Berkeley Street in St Kilda towards the, I think it's the National Theatre, and I remember him saying, you know what, Dylan, I'm really sorry for the way I treated you when I was younger. And that was a pretty significant moment for me. So it was like, you know, I think we were probably the closest. When I was like 17, I went over to America as an exchange student, and right before I left, we couldn't contact him. He'd moved but not passed on his details. I mean, you idolise your big brother.
Your big brother, yeah.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he was way cooler than me, and he reappeared, you know, right before I left. So him disappearing makes sense in some ways.
Would you mind telling us a bit about what the day he went missing, the circumstances around that?
It's the timeline's a little bit weird in the sense that he was living in Brunswick with his wife. Well, that was sort of a funny marriage in a sense because they were very bohemian, and originally when they got married, they were living in separate places, and I don't think they ever actually moved in together. And a month after he disappeared, his ex-wife, now I guess she's remarried, and I won't say her name because she doesn't want her name out there, but she rang my father and said, oh, look, I haven't seen Owen for a month. And he kind of would tend to just, I guess for want of a better description, he's a bit of a alternative kind of, living sort of a fairly hippie sort of lifestyle. He's just kind of doing whatever, you know. He would work when he felt like it just to pay the bills. And he'd go to a lot of things like Confest and things like that. And sometimes, you know, and he'd come back and he'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, I was away. And she was kind of used to that. But then he's like, I don't think he's coming back. He's left all his stuff. Like he left his bank books. He left he had this like big chest. I think my grandfather made it. It was like this massive wooden chest, and it had all of his stuff in there, and he didn't take any of it. But she said right before he disappeared, he stopped kind of partying, he stopped drinking. It's like he became this serious person, you know, he's in his 20s, and it's almost like he's going, all right, I'm going to make a break for it. And she couldn't really see it at the time, but she said when she looked back, was like, it was so obvious. She didn't know how she missed it.
But he did change, he had a personality change just before he went missing.
Yeah, it's almost like he shut everyone off, but not in a really obvious way. He wouldn't sort of say to people, hey, I don't want to talk to you. But she said it was like he was just slowly withdrawing. And then she said, then he just wasn't there anymore. But he didn't take anything with him. So maybe he was setting up a whole new identity, which I suppose in 91, it would have been fairly easy because we didn't have the internet like we have now.
Mm-hmm.
he wouldn't really leave much of a footprint.
So initially it felt like it sort of fit for him to drop out for a while.
Mm.
And then it went on and then it went on.
Mm.
When did it really hit you that he had left you, walked away from you?
I think the moment it was probably the strongest for me was in a couple of years after he disappeared, and I'd been in a relationship with a girl for like a year, and then we broke up, and it was just like, that was probably the crappiest Christmas I've ever had. It was like, I think it was like the 22nd of December we broke up, and I was just feeling really sorry for myself, and I'm just like, man, I just wish I could call Owen right now. I wish we could just, I don't know, go down to St Kilda, go to Ackland Street, get a kebab, you know, and have a couple of beers and just talk about stuff. You know, walk along the beach like we used to, and I didn't have that. And I was just suddenly like, oh, crap, you know, I'm really alone. I felt really, at that moment, pretty desperate. And I was like, man, you know, I just wish I could somehow, you know, just see him. I can't explain it because it's, I know I've been through the grief of losing my mum, through the anger, through the just absolute pain in the absolute pits of your guts kind of pain. But yeah, I just can't get to that point, obviously, with Owen, because yeah, I don't know. And people are like, oh, you know, people are silly and they're like, oh, what do you reckon's happened to him? I'm like, if I knew that, I would go and find him. I would, you know, search the ends of the earth to find him if I knew all I've been trying to. But I mean, I like in June, I walked this like massive walk for like 500 and something Ks. I was just like, that's it. School holidays are here. I'm going to walk to Tumut, New South Wales, which is where he was born. Then of course, all the realists are like, oh, dude, that's going to take you like 4 weeks. You only have 2 weeks holidays. You'll get fired. And then I'm like, oh man. And then I've got this like Fitbit, you know, just got, and I'm like, right, that's it. I'm going to do a virtual walk, and then I'm going to walk the last 50 Ks.
Awesome.
From like the beginning of the Snowy Mountain Highway through to Tumut. And I went there and I'm like, I'm so unfit. It's ridiculous. And it was freezing cold because it was in June. Yeah. It was like late June, early July. I think it was July, yeah. And I'm walking and I'm like thinking, oh, yeah. And I had like this, what was the app? Some like, oh, what was it? Like Strava kind of app, you know. It's like, oh, telling me how many Ks per minute or how many Ks per hour I'm walking. And I'm like walking really hard. And I got this one massive hill and it was like, I swear it's straight up. It felt like it was going backwards like that. And I'm walking up this hill and I'm just like, oh, I've got to do this for Owen. I'm just pushing myself. So I did that to try and, I guess, raise awareness of what it's like for someone who's got a family member who's missing.
And to walk to his place of birth is so emotional and so moving.
For me, it has become like, okay, if you're thinking about leaving and you just think no one gives a rat's about you, think again, because there would be someone in your life, in your family, that will absolutely be devastated.
Forever.
That's Dylan Redman, and there's a link to the Facebook page Help Find Owen in the show notes to this episode. After the break, we'll hear from Professor Soren Blau from the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine. She wants to get the word out about changes to the way missing persons investigations are carried out in Australia, and she may want your DNA. I first met Soren in 2018, and she told me this story about some unidentified remains in her care at that time.
Skeletal remains were located in bushland in Victoria when a person was clearing a path for fire prevention. The full skeleton was there. It was associated with clothing, some personal effects, so things like a drink bottle, but also a noose. So it was apparent from the circumstances that this individual had chosen to take his own life, but there was no hypothesis about who this person was or, you know, why they were there. So that's where the kind of forensic anthropology comes into its own, to develop that information. So the age, the sex, the ancestry. We work with the forensic odontologist, so the dentist looks at the teeth, and he actually had evidence of restoration, so filling, so which means he'd been to a dentist. We work with the DNA specialist. We were able to obtain a DNA profile. So we've got a really good post-mortem record, if you want, of this individual, but he remains unidentified, which is terribly sad. And his many features which should be identifiable, but because we don't have any sort of records of a missing person to match with, we can't do anything at this point.
What sort of picture did you get? Did you get sort of an age range?
Yeah, so he's a young, that is a male between, you know, I think it was 25 and 30 years old. Oh, okay. Caucasoid. We gave him, you know, he wasn't a particularly interesting stature, you know, not unusually short or tall, but that, you know, he did have, as I mentioned, the evidence of the dental restorations. There was no evidence of trauma, probably not surprising given the association with the rope. So, yeah, I guess it's just one of these sad stories where a young man, you know, ends up in that sort of situation but is still unidentified.
There's more about that story in my book CSI Told You Lies, although I can tell you those remains are still unidentified and being cared for at the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine. If you have any information about that or any other missing persons case, you should contact the Missing Persons Coordination Centre, which is an arm of the Australian Federal Police. Their website is missingpersons.gov.au, and there's a link in the show notes to this episode. There'll be more from Professor Blau shortly.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Thank you to our patrons Laura, Caitlin Miller, Nikki Shea, Margaret Hobson, Paul O'Connell, Becca M, and Sharon May. Professor Soren Blau is back to talk about the changes in missing persons investigations in Australia and why they're potentially good news for families like Dylan and Owen Redmonds.
So it's particularly helpful for people or families like Dylan's family, isn't it? In his particular situation, he has a long-term missing family member who is Owen, his brother. And also, Owen is the kind of, or was the kind of character who may well have been outside of Victoria if he is indeed deceased. So why is it particularly pertinent to their story?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, we're advocating what we're calling a Victorian Missing Persons Families Day. But of course, the way that the day works is that it is part of a national approach. And as you're probably aware, the Australian Federal Police have launched a national program where they're working with all of the jurisdictions for that very reason, because just because a person may be reported in one state, we know that lots of people travel and move for a whole range of reasons. And so sadly may be deceased in another jurisdiction, and it's really important that all the jurisdictions obtain information and then, of course, have the ability to share. In Victoria, we will start with looking locally. So we have our particular DNA database for Victoria, But of course, we realise exactly what you said, that may be too limiting. And so we now have the opportunity, with the family member consenting, of course, to provide their personal information, to upload that onto what's known as a national DNA database.
So up until, was it last year, 2020, that was not the case? You couldn't access these kinds of family records from other states and vice versa?
Well, actually, the National Missing Persons and Victim System is as it says, a national database that has been operational since 2016.
Right.
Because of some of the complexities of legislation around the different jurisdictions, sometimes the DNA component of that has been complex, and the National Missing Persons and Victim System is not a DNA database itself. So it will hold a range of information, and then the DNA database is a separate database. So it's quite complicated, really.
Okay. So is that part of the reason then that you're urging families to come back? Can they give permission for their DNA?
Yes. So we know that sadly many families have spoken, whether with police or with other missing person advocacy groups. We're inviting anyone, even if you have provided information in the past, to come and meet with us again, because legislation has changed. We want to make sure that the appropriate consent is provided, and that the family members, of course, have the opportunity to ask any questions. Sometimes these things can be quite complicated. And by giving that consent now, that we hope will allow us in Victoria, but also, of course, nationally, to up the chances of doing wider searches. And, of course, it's true to say that the technology associated with things like DNA is very much improved, particularly, the last couple of years.
If someone's given a sample at some point 10 or 15 years ago or whatever, even 5 years ago, would it be worth their while coming to give another one, do you think?
It definitely would. It's not that we would be wanting different samples. The process is the same. So the family member can come and do what's called a buccal swab. So it's just basically a little brush with equivalent of a earbud in the inside of the mouth. So they may have done that before. It's doesn't hurt, obviously relatively quick, and they can do that themselves. And in addition to that swab, we are also asking for any other details that they may remember, and that could be anything from how they looked to whether their loved one attended a dentist and they might have dental records. Even things like smiling photographs, for example, may be potentially very helpful in the process of identification.
Yeah, of course, different ideas of what a person can look like. Because you, in the book, you and I talk about the fact that you're in charge, I say, of the unidentified remains that are held at Vitham. How many sets of unidentified remains do you have there at the moment?
So in the state of Victoria, the count is at the moment about 142, and I say about because the numbers fluctuate for various reasons.
But it's reasonable to think that potentially you have the remains of somebody whose family is looking for them elsewhere.
Correct.
In Australia.
That's exactly right. Exactly, yeah. Right. So just because we have sadly unidentified human remains in our care in Victoria doesn't mean that that person may originally, for example, have grown up or been born in another state.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean no one's looking for them or no
Correct.
One cares for them.
Exactly. No, they're very much cared in our care and respectfully cared for in our mortuary.
Yeah, that's always the point I want to make, even for myself, because when I first heard that, when I first heard there were unidentified remains in mortuaries in Australia, I just found it breathtakingly sad and I couldn't believe it was possible. But then I realised, well, I'm sure there are people looking for them, but things happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as we discussed before, people go missing for a whole range of reasons.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's very complex why people perhaps take some years to report their loved one missing. And, certainly in this initiative, we're not questioning the why and wherefore. We really want to just work with families to give
a name back to the deceased people currently in our care, and of course ultimately give some sort of information. And I hate the word closure, but, you know, some answers to family members.
Well, I think it's important too to let people know that there's no judgment about the length of time that a person has not been reported missing.
Yep.
We've heard lots of stories about relatives who have been led to believe, for example, that people are alive and realize much later that they might not be. And there are lots of reasons why you should come forward if for any reason at all you think it might be a good idea to do so now. There's no judgment.
Exactly. Exactly. We're very happy to talk with anyone who has a missing relative, and it doesn't matter how long ago they went missing. Mm. We certainly want to ensure that we don't raise expectations, because we really appreciate that talking about your loved one can be very emotional, and we by no means make promises for an absolute outcome. But this initiative is important, I think, to demonstrate that we are really still thinking about the importance of identification, and that we really do empathise with what families go through when they don't have those answers.
We have lots of listeners outside of Victoria, obviously, so they can get in touch through the website and the phone numbers anywhere in Australia, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and certainly if they, you know, we have the information, as you said, on our website at the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine, and we're happy to direct members of the public to their similar initiatives in other states.
And this isn't a red light special. They can do this at any time, right? It's not
correct.
Just August.
No.
Yeah.
And while, you know, we acknowledge National Missing Persons Week is acknowledged, you know, traditionally in the first week of August, obviously, sadly, due to the ramifications of COVID, we've deferred our meetings in Victoria till September. But as you rightly said, we're hoping that the start of this initiative is something that then is ongoing, and that, you know, families can reach out to us at any time, and we can organise to meet with them at a time that suits them.
There are links in the show notes to this episode for all of the organisations we're talking about, and for the Help Find Owen Facebook page run by Dylan Redman. I sent some of those links through to Dylan Redman after speaking to Dr. Soren at the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine, and then I gave him a follow-up call to see how he's travelling. Are you back to teaching now, or what are you up to?
No, so I run a symbol company now.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's a symbol company?
We make symbols in Turkey, like the things that make a lot of noise.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so we make those in Turkey, and so I got out of teaching. I did a master's in counselling, and I got stuck in a little office, and I felt really claustrophobic. And I think I'm more a get out there and kind of hang out with people, have real conversations, not have it set up like people walk into a room and, you know, you're taking notes and all that sort of stuff. So I'm a drummer, obviously, so I just looked into making my own cymbals in Istanbul, and we went over there to Istanbul and checked it out. Found a factory to work with, and I started designing my own stuff and running what we call drum sheds. So we get out in the community and we hang out with drummers and, put a whole bunch of drum kits together and annoy the neighbours and make a lot of noise. But, you know, we also have like a quieter space we can hang out and have a bit of a chat and check out, you know, cymbals, I suppose, but just talk about life. And yeah, and I guess it kind of, for me, it came out of that the whole idea that, you know, before my brother went missing, he didn't really talk to me about it. And I think for me, a key factor is in being able to have real honest conversations about stuff.
So it's like drums as therapy. You've combined everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you what, it is therapy, because we get people come along and they're like, oh, I'm not really sure. Oh, I'll give it a go. And then they walk away and go, oh, my gosh, I just want to buy a drum kit now. I want to play the drums. Or I haven't played drums in 20 years and I was feeling a bit depressed about it, but you've really re-inspired me, reinvigorated me. Or my favourite one is the 10-year-old, 12-year-old girl who comes in like all scared. And then they get on the kit and they just light up and they just, you know, they have a jam with their dad, and it's really cool.
Actually, I'll have to talk to you about my daughter, Dali. She's a born percussionist, I reckon, because she's always tapping and making noise, and it drives me crazy. But I say to her, mate, we got to get you drums. She's a percussionist, and she's 11.
Oh, wow. Okay. You're in trouble then.
Yep, that's all right. I want to get her a drum kit, you know. I'm like always up for encouraging people to do what they do. So yeah, all right, I'll definitely talk to you about that. Cool.
Awesome.
So I wanted to talk to you though about the fact that I went the other day to VIFM, Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine, and because I just wrote a book about those guys. The book's called CSI Told You Lies. And one of the people that is in the book is a lady called Soren Blau, and Soren is a forensic anthropologist. And so they work a lot with missing persons, that area of stuff. So I went in and chatted with them, and the whole time I was just thinking about you. I was thinking about your story in particular, you and Owen, your brother, because what they're really wanting to highlight this year is that it's like long-term missing persons cases, okay?
Yeah.
Particularly Soren, because she's an anthropologist, she deals with, and you know, I hate, of course, I'm going to hate saying this, but remains that are from a long time ago, okay?
Yeah.
And so she wants to really get the message out there that she wants family members to come back in and give DNA again, give samples again, even if you've done that before, because for the first time, this is unbelievable. You probably know this already, but they never had a national database before. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's all state run, right?
Right. It's crazy. Yeah. And the more they spoke about it, the more I thought, I know a guy who might have traveled, you know?
Hmm.
I know a young man, or I know of a young man, who is a great example of someone who may well have been off backpacking, walking, because I remember you went on that walk to where Owen was born. I thought, if ever there's a character who may have been somewhere else in Australia, it's your brother, right?
Yeah.
So for the first time, you know, this could be different. It could be worth your making contact again and going back in. DNA technology's changed, and we've got this link now with other states, and it could be worth trying again. So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
because it would have been 2005 or 6 that I gave a DNA sample, so at least 10 years ago.
I was saying to them, I'm the kind of person who'd think, no, they've already got it. I gave them a sample. And they were laughing, going, yeah, we don't still have it. I would think, yeah, they'll still have it somewhere. And they were like, no, we don't, you know. You got to, which I know is so frustrating for families, because it's like, why don't you?
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Because I guess the thought would be that they would have everything on file accessible, but they would archive things, or they would just dispose of a sample. In my case too, because there was a coroner ruling that my brother's deceased, but they said, oh, look, we can't find proof of life, there's no body, but we've decided to declare him deceased. And I'm just like, I was shattered when that happened. But I think it was more about closing cases than it was about actualities. So,
well, it's the same from their perspective. They have here at the mortuary all these sets of remains that are unidentified. And to me, that feels like, oh, that's so sad. No one's looking for them. And they're like, no, that's not what that means. It means that there's probably families looking for them. They just don't know they're here in Victoria, you know. And again, it reminded me of other families who just are so convinced that, no, this person wouldn't have done that. They wouldn't have traveled. They wouldn't have left the state. And sometimes we don't know people as well as we think we do, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I would see Owen traveling. I know myself. Yeah. I love traveling. I love getting around the country. And so I could imagine him being in the Pilbara somewhere, you know, or up in Arnhem Land, just living on the land. So
it was great actually listening back to our old conversation to put it back into this episode, because I thought, yeah, no, I did remember it properly. I did remember it. You were saying, yeah, he was, you know, living in Brunswick, and he absolutely was the kind of person who might have gone away. You weren't that worried initially, because there were long periods of time where he didn't contact the family, you know. He could have been anywhere.
Hmm. Well, you know, we had a kind of interesting conversation with Owen's ex-wife, and she let some new information out that I didn't know about.
Recently?
Yeah, like I'm talking about like a year ago, but wow. It's sort of like something, obviously we can't really check it out, but she said that Owen and she and a whole bunch of friends around the time that Owen went missing, they would go up to like New South Wales and Queensland to, I think it was like Confest and different sort of, you know, quote unquote hippie festivals. And they would hitch rides, like they would hitchhike. And it's something that sort of I thought about. I thought, nah, it's kind of stupid. It's a silly idea. But they said that there was one particular couple that fell prey to Ivan Milat. And I thought ages ago, nah, surely not. Like Owen would be too smart. But it's around about that time too, which is a bit weird. But Owen's ex-wife said that they would often hitchhike and up to these festivals and there and back. But then once this couple had fallen prey to Ivan Milat, they said they never did it again. But what's to say that Owen, wasn't hitchhiking? Because I could see him doing that. He'd just be like, cool, I'm heading off. I'm going to go to Queensland or I'm going to go to the Outback or whatever. Let's hitchhike and, see, like, sort of couch surf or whatever, you know, around Australia.
Yeah, well, that's the attraction, isn't it? It's free. And once you've done it, and also for young, healthy, strong, fit men, like, I think we were still very much in the mindset that it was safe for men to do anything. That was the thing about Ivan Milat, was that he was able to overcome very big, strapping young men. It was really eye-opening for a lot of people.
I guess that's the power of, or he had a shotgun or he had guns.
That's it.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense now, but at the time we were like, oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where are you at with your sort of attitude and stuff to it now? Last time I spoke to you, it was just still very overwhelming for you and you were still investing a lot of your time and emotional energy in the search for Owen. Where are things?
It's one of those funny things. You kind of pick it up and put it down. You know, life gets in the way. I mean, I'm running a symbol company where we're shipping all around the world. So, like, I'm super busy with that.
Yep.
But I think in the back of my mind, even up here, I've got a cup sitting on top of my computer monitor of my brother. So even in our warehouse that we're just setting up at the moment, we're going to have a heap of these cups and serve coffees and have hangouts and stuff. And so for me, it's an ongoing process of just something will pop up. So, for example, the link you sent me, I went and signed up to do another sample.
Great, already?
Oh, yeah, I'll go and do that. And, wow. You know, and it's for me, it's, you know, do I hope that I'll see my brother again? Yes. Do I think I will? I guess I'm not sure. But for me,
because a link like that, something as simple as that, something as out of the blue as me, of all people, popping up in your messenger, Facebook messenger, and going, hey, remember me? I was thinking of you because, you know, this thing happened in my world where I went in and did an interview and I thought of you. Here's a link. So all of a sudden, I've brought it right back up to front of mind and I've given you a link to click on that may, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what will come of that? Like what feelings does that bring up to you?
Well, I guess that's the beauty of community, you know, like I would never have forgotten that interview with you because like for me, you're a significant person, you know, I'd seen you on the project and, you know, it really made an impression on me.
I've given you a link that's going to give you the worst news? Like, that I might have done that too.
But I think that there's a trust in that though, because I could see the genuineness in what you were trying to do. I think if you were that sort of person who was like, you know, a negative influence or whatever, I wouldn't put you in such a, it's like the inner circle of trust or whatever, I suppose.
Well, that's good. But even though we both know it's like well-intentioned, but what if, you know, I mean, now you're facing another one of those weird moments in life, isn't it? Because like, yay, the technology's improved and they've got this national register. But what if, you know, it's like, what if the dreaded closure comes?
Yeah, I consider that too. Even, well, what about if I found out that Owen was living on the streets and he was homeless?
Yeah.
You know, what about if I found out something really bad? But, you know, I guess at the end of the day, that's life, you know, life isn't always perfect and things don't always fit perfectly into a box. And I guess in that sense, in that moment, you deal with it and you reconcile it. Just as like for the last 30 years, I've been reconciling the fact that I've got a brother that I don't know where he's at.
Is it 30 years now?
Yeah, so it was, what, 1991, so yeah. Yeah, bang on 30 years. So, oh, yeah, because that was when that new information came out, because I met with Owen's ex-wife and we actually went to the house that he was last at and we knocked on the door and, well, I didn't, because I was too gutless, but she knocked on the door and said, oh, hey, you know, my ex-husband used to live here and the people were really nice. We did like a bit of, we stood out the front and I'd put out a post, you know, Owen, if you're around, we'll wait here at Irvine Crescent for you, you know, we'll wait at this specific time. If you want to reconnect, this is a great time to do it. You know, no judgment, no hard feelings, no weirdness. Just come and give us a hug and, you know, everything will be okay. Mm. But so, you know, I actually do love the fact that you reached out and I love the fact that I get messages all the time from different people saying, oh, hey, I remember your brother. Oh, I was in year 12 at Trafalgar High School with your brother. Oh, he's so funny. He had really cool hair.
What, yeah, you know, he did.
What a cool guy, you know. So, yeah. And you get people going, oh, I think I saw your brother. And sometimes those things, those ones are a bit like, oh, man, ouch. But I don't know. I guess I'm fairly reconciled to the fact that, you know, I've got a missing brother and I kind of roll with it. And occasionally it sneaks up on you and I get a bit emotional. But most of the time I think I wouldn't say I'm over it or whatever. I think I'm used to it, which maybe isn't such a great thing. I don't know.
Well, you don't have much choice, hey?
No. Well, true. I guess you got to reconcile it and you can't just sit in it day in, day out and feel sorry for yourself, because I figure there's a lot more I can do to help other people who are going through the same thing.
Thank you to our guests today, Dylan Redman and Professor Soren Blau from the Victorian Institute of Forensic Medicine. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. And thank you to our patrons, Courtney Baskovich, Yvonne Ball, Kaya, Alicia Kershaw, Abby Pardo, and Ublius Publius. We'll be back next week.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.